When you grow up in the largest county in Ireland, you can be almost spoiled by all of what's around you. County Cork, in Ireland's deep south, has a lot to boast about. It has some of the country's greenest and most productive pasture land. It's home to many of Ireland's high-tech firms. And there's many a Georgian mansion, ruined castle, prehistoric stone circle, and important battle site scattered all around the county. It's also where thousands of Irish men, women, and children got their last look at their homeland when poverty forced them to emigrate and take their chances on a crowded Atlantic crossing. Barry Maloney grew up on a farm a few miles upstream from Kinsale, where he now hosts walking tours of the historic town. He's back with us right now on Travel with Rick Steves to recommend what you can see along Ireland's south coast as you venture into the scenery and small towns along the wild Atlantic Way. Hey, Barry.
Hi, Rick. Great to talk to you. And yeah, let's talk about the wonders of the south coast.
Take me on a quick review then, Barry. Before we get into specifics, let's just say you got a week and you're going to travel from Wexford and Rosslare over there on the southeastern tip of Ireland where the boat leaves for France, all the way over to Dingle Peninsula, one of my favorite places anywhere in Europe on the southwest tip. What are the highlights if you were to drive from Wexford all the way to Dingle?
Sure. Well, that would be wonderful to have a week because then you could slow down a little bit, you know, and as they say, go where Ireland takes you. I'd stay in Kinsale along the way, and then I wouldn't forget West Cork. It's the area basically between Kinsale and Dingle and or Killarney. And they would say down here, West Cork, it's not so much a place, it's a state of mind where we slow down, have time for each other. So it's kind of an eclectic mix of artists, musicians and food artisans mixed with the farming communities that go back generations. And there's a lot of lovely, charming small towns you could stop in. Clonakilty, for example, famous as the birthplace of Michael Collins, the rebel leader who fought for Irish independence and negotiated our independence from the United Kingdom. But after Clonakilty then, which is west, there's a lovely farming town, Skibbereen. And that's where you connect with the sad history of Ireland. There's a huge famine mass grave there and a museum all about the famine. And then when you get out to the west, the landscape gets much more rugged and jagged and coastal. And right down the southwest corner, there's five beautiful peninsulas that jut out into the Atlantic. Kind of like five fingers, you know?
Yeah.
Mizzen Head would be the most southwesterly point of Ireland. So it's really got this edge of the world feeling.
And of course, Ring of Kerry is the touristy one. And everybody goes down there as part of the routine in Ireland, and you make the Ring of Kerry. Can you talk a little bit about an alternative to the Ring of Kerry for those of us who want to be immersed in the natural grandeur of Ireland, but don't want to be in a traffic jam of tour buses?
Sure, Rick. Well, I know your favorite would be Dingle, but just to focus on another little jewel for once, the Beara Peninsula is really beautiful. It's the middle peninsula, and it's got this really amazing visual contrast between rugged, dark, folded rocks, green rolling fields, and the blue sea and the waves slapping and the salty air in your face, you know? And you could do a lovely drive out around that. And there's a kind of mountain pass that goes over it as well.
So that's, is that, how do you pronounce that? Or Beara. How do you spell that?
Beara was B-A-R-A, Beara.
And what about Bantry?
Bantry then is a really beautiful harbour town. And the best place to appreciate Bantry, there's a 18th century house, Bantry House, which is these beautiful manicured gardens up behind it. And there's 99 steps going up behind the house. And when you look back on the top, it's spectacular. You're looking down over the house and the whole bay is in front of you. And even better, do it in the evening because the sun sets into Bantry Bay. Songs have been written about that. And it's a beautiful place known for its seafood and its cheeses and agricultural produce down there as well.
Also, you've got this notorious Blarney Stone, which is just a kitschy tourist trap. Mm-hmm. But it does remind us of the gift of gab. In
it
Ireland,
does.
And what
yeah.
a charming part of the Irish experience that is.
Yeah, and we learned that as youngsters in school, we learned that very quickly, that the guy getting all the girls was not the most handsome guy or the strongest guy. He was the guy with the quick wit, you know, the funniest guy.
So that's there's really an incentive for people to be good with the gift of gab, and you get a lot of time to practice that in the pubs.
True, and storytelling, you know, storytelling goes way back to the ancient times, telling stories around a campfire, you know, so the best storytellers really get the attention, or the best singers. If you can sing a story, you know, it's even better in the pubs.
You know, there's a magic that you get when you go. People who are listening now might not quite relate to what we're talking about, but there's many times I've been, not all the time I go to a pub in Ireland, but many times when you go to a pub in Ireland, There's just an alignment of the music and the crowd and the conviviality. And when you sit down and share a beer with somebody there, you'll learn about those beautiful poetic. I mean, you almost become a poet when you sit down and you connect with somebody in a pub. By the way, we're talking with Barry Maloney, and he's a tour guide in the south of Ireland. His hometown is Kinsale. He's just written a book on his hometown called Kinsale. And Barry's website is historicstrollkinsale.com. So when I think of the south coast of Ireland, Barry, first thing I think of is Cork and a little town near Cork called Cove. It's spelled C-O-B-H, but it's pronounced Cove. And if I think of the historic things that have happened there, I mean, didn't Cove used to be called Queenstown because Queen Victoria was first step in Ireland was right there back in the middle of the 1800s?
Sure, yeah. They renamed the town after her visit. And Cove, of course, world famous as the last port of call of Titanic.
So the last place Titanic stopped before sailing away. In fact, there's a great museum in Cove about the Titanic.
Isn't there? Yeah, and there's a walking tour called the Titanic Trail, which I love that tour. And on that tour, I always like to learn about the seven lucky people who got off the Titanic. They were the last to get off.
Seven people got off in Cove. Isn't that something?
Yeah. And generally speaking, I don't want to generalize too much about the South Coast, but generally speaking, along the South Coast, the English influence would be stronger for two reasons. One, the farmland was better. And secondly, we're on the trade route, on the English trade route from the New Worlds.
I get this strong sense that England took the best land and told the people who were there first to go west, go to the rocky land, where it's not so good for farming. In fact, just near Cork, there's a place called Hook Head and a village called Crook. And all my life we've said by hook or by crook, we're going to take that, you know. And that actually goes right back to there. Cromwell, sort of the English conquistador, came there and said, we're going to take Waterford by hook or by crook.
Yeah.
And it just reminds me the English had a huge presence there and they took the best land. And consequently, a lot of people left the country during the hard times. Mm-hmm. And when you travel in the south, you can go to the Kennedy Homestead and learn about how the great-grandfather of JFK left Ireland in 1858. And you can also go to the Dunbrody Famine Ship and actually walk through one of those ships that were nicknamed the Coffin Ship. Tell us, as a tour guide, what do you share about the Famine Ship and about the Kennedy Homestead?
Well, those coffin ships were aptly named because so many people flooded out of Ireland after the famine that the ships were overstocked. And many of them, those ships were designed for carrying freight, like wood. They'd be bringing wood from America back to Europe and then packed jam full with poor and starving Irish people. So obviously, a lot of them died on the way. They didn't make it to America, you know. The ones that made it were the lucky ones. The scars of the famine are still here with us because the island of Ireland, our population is still 30%, over 30% less than it was 200 years ago.
So before the famine, it was what, 5 million?
8.25 million.
Oh my goodness. So now it's down to...
Now it's 6 million on the island, whereas, say, England, their population would be fivefold what it was 200 years ago. And of course, America would be over 30 times what it was 200 years ago. And I guess that's because a lot of the Irish are over there.
Probably more people of Irish descent in America than there are Irish in Ireland.
Definitely. And there's a great movie I'd like to recommend to your listeners. If they want to see visually what the south coast of Ireland looks like and also get into our history, it's a beautiful movie called The Wind That Shakes the Barley. The Wind That Shakes the Barley. And of course, the title has its own story because 100 years ago, when Irish rebels were fighting for independence, they carried in their pockets barley or oats as a kind of provision food while they were moving from ambush site to ambush site. And if they were killed, they'd often be buried on unmarked graves. And of course, the seeds of barley would shoot up in the spring. And this symbolized the Irish resistance against English rule, you know. But it's a really beautiful movie. It's all about our civil war and our early independence.
I love that movie, but I didn't know the meaning of the name. What an evocative thing. Ireland has such a rich and long story. In a lot of ways, it's a terrible beauty. I like that phrase because it talks about the heartache, but the majesty of Ireland at the same time. The great thing about Ireland to me is how accessible not people, but friends are. I mean, you've got friends in Ireland, and it sounds a little bit silly maybe to say it, but you really do. When you go to Ireland, you make friends like you make friends nowhere else in your travels.
Yeah, Barry, you know why, Rick? We love to talk. And we never know that you're some long lost cousin coming back to us. You know, there's so many. There's 80 million people worldwide who claim direct Irish ancestry. There's only 6 million of us here.
Wow. So let's just finish our discussion up here, Barry, with take me to a place where we can be still and ponder the rich and beautiful story, the heritage of Ireland. Where would you take me just to cap the experience?
I'm delighted you asked that question, Rick. And the place that jumped into my mind was Drumbeg Stone Circle. It's one of the most accessible stone circles in Ireland, about 3,000 years old, with 17 stones in a circle facing the southwest coast, and also lined up with the setting sun on the shortest day of the year. Because thousands of years ago, our ancestors feared, as the days got darker and darker and darker, that they might not get brighter again. So they gathered on that day to see the sun set and pray, basically, that it would rise again the next day. And the days get longer again into the spring and into the crops being sown and hope. And I think we can learn a lot from those ancestors, can't we?
That's a beautiful thing to, and to take a thought like that with you to one of those mysterious Stonehenge-type stone circles, and then to imagine it 3,000 years ago. Barry Maloney, thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations on your book, Kinsale. And I will see you next time I'm in the south of Ireland, and we'll enjoy some a nice hike to a stone circle, and then drop by a good restaurant and have some fresh seafood.
And don't forget the music, Rick, because the music inspired by the landscape just really will, even if you don't think you have it, it'll reignite your Irish DNA.
Ah, I want all of my Irish DNA, all that little Norwegian-Irish DNA. I want to give it a spark, and I'll get that next time I see you. Thanks, Barry.
Thank you, Rick.
And so I said, the mountain glen, I'll seek it morning early, and join the bold united men, while soft wind shakes the barley.
Barry Maloney hosts walking tours of his home base of Kinsale, Ireland. He also collects many of the town's tales and legends in his book. It's called Kinsale. Barry's online at historicstrollkinsale.com. He tells us more about what it means to call County Cork the Rebel County of Ireland. That's in a short extra to today's interview that we've posted on our website at ricksteves.com/radio. You'll also find a short clip there from Irish tour guide and innkeeper Stephen McPhillamy. He tells us the story of a symbol you can spot all over the north of Ireland, the legendary Bloody Red Hand. Former Travel with Rick Steves producer Sarah McCormick explored her ancestral roots in Ireland back when an economic recession still cast a shadow. She sent us this to commemorate the Irish famine of the 1800s.
I'm walking alone along the north bank of the River Liffey that runs through Dublin. The boardwalk is practically deserted, well away from the touristy crowds south of the river. And then I happen upon a group of people. Like me, they are heading east, toward a wooden tall ship moored on the riverbank up ahead. They are all incredibly tall and impossibly thin, and the expressions on their faces make me want to look away. They are dressed in rags and their feet are bare. One of the men has a lifeless child slung over his shoulder. A hungry-looking dog follows them. Of course, they are statues, depicting 19th-century famine victims, heading to a ship that will sail them out of their hungry country.
Hello, how are you? Where are you all from?
I'm standing on the decks of a famine ship, a 150-foot-long wooden tall ship, like the one that brought my own Irish ancestors to the New World during the Irish potato famine. Our tour guide, Paul, is talking about what the Irish call the Great Hunger, when a blight decimated the potato crop in the mid-19th century. Under British rule, Irish tenant farmers eked out a desperate living on small plots of rented land. Because the potato yielded a higher number of calories per acre than any other available crop, millions of Ireland's poor relied on it as their primary source of food. Beginning in 1845, a fungus destroyed the potato crop several years in a row. No significant help arrived from England or anywhere else, and at least 1 million Irish died of starvation and disease. Another million emigrated on ships like these.
Of course, 1847 was the worst year. It was known here as Black 47. And not only were people dying from starvation, but also huge outbreaks of disease, especially the likes of dysentery, cholera, and then a huge outbreak of typhus, which became known as famine fever or ship's fever. and therefore ships became known as coffin ships.
We duck around the rigging and descend into the ship, down a steep set of stairs to a cramped cabin. The ceilings are low and there are no windows. Narrow wooden bunks line the walls. Built as a cargo ship meant to carry only 40 people, it generally carried over 200 passengers on its voyages. Mortality rates aboard ships like these were around 30%.
Toilets were non-existent on the original. It was just buckets and chambers and throwing it overboard. When people came on board, they would find wherever they could to sleep. People taking turns in sleeping, anyone traveling alone, they would share with complete strangers.
The ship I'm on is actually a modern, seaworthy replica of a famine ship called the Jeannie Johnston. Inside its cramped cabin, there are life-sized wax models representing actual people who traveled on the Jeannie Johnston, some of whose stories have been tracked down.
There would have been a lot of women on board, indentured servants, or the likes of Mary Pendergast in the corner down here to my right. She has a letter in her hand. Do you see it? November 16th, 1852. My dearest sister, we're delighted to hear that you've decided to come and stay at myself and me hall in New York. The children are so looking forward to meeting you, and we are dying to hear of news from home. God bless and protect you on your journey. Your loving sister, Maggie.
About 160 miles away, on the southern coast, is Cove, spelled C-O-B-H. Estimates are that during the height of the famine, 2.5 million Irish sailed out of Cove in less than a decade. Playing host to so many sad partings earned Cove the nickname the saddest place in Ireland. The Cove Heritage Center on the waterfront is a museum that tells the story of the famine immigrants. It also has an exhibit about the Titanic, which picked up its last passengers right here in Cove before heading out into the Atlantic. Out on Ireland's west coast in County Mayo, facing the New World, there's another ship you can visit. It's the National Famine Monument, and it sits alone in a grassy field. This ship is Ireland's largest bronze sculpture. Skeletons of famine victims form the ship's rigging. I find this sculpture even harder to look at than the statues walking along the riverbank in Dublin. They, at least, had a chance of making it. Poverty and emigration didn't end with the famine. If you walk into a pub in Ireland, before the night is over, you'll hear the band play a song about sad goodbyes and longed-for reunions. When Ireland's Celtic Tiger economy boomed back in the 1990s, the tide turned. Ireland became a place to come back to. But with the financial crisis of recent years, good jobs are scarce and emigration from the island is on the rise again, especially among the young. On my way to the airport to fly home, my cab driver's eyes well up when he tells me about his two daughters, both in their 20s. He's just sent them to New York to stay with friends, where they can find work.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington, by Tim Tatton, Casimira Hall, and Donna Bardsley. Our website is managed by Andrew Wakeling. Our theme music was written and performed by Jerry Frank. Affiliate relations are by Sheila Gerzoff. You can find links to our guests and search the show archives at ricksteves.com/radio. We'll see you next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.